Good morning. Welcome to Synchronicity Talk Radio for your mind, body, and soul. I'm your host, Marie Bernard. Thanks so much for being with me today. I did make a promo, but it's not here. So, it's Synchronicity. Hello. So you're listening to CITR 101.9 FM in Vancouver. You might also be listening online at CITR.ca, CosmicDimensions.com, EmpowerRadio.com, or on the Co-Creator Network and wherever you are listening from. Thanks so much for joining us today. We have a very special guest today, Gary Schwartz. He is a PhD from Harvard University. He also taught for 12 years at Yale, and he has over 400 academic papers with his name on it, on them, and he's got great credentials. He's written a book called The Sacred Promise, and we're going to find out what The Sacred Promise is. Welcome to the show, Gary.
Thank you very much. It's a pleasure to be here and also be listening to birds chirping.
It's African, or not African, Australian bush music, I believe, from the previous show.
Great
way to move into to synchronicity. So tell us, okay, the sacred promise, how science is discovering spirit's collaboration with us in our daily lives. Now, what, first of all, inspired you to write this book?
You know, that's a complex question, because part of it was actually the tipping point was actually a personal experience that I had related to my having a very serious case of the flu, where I had three spontaneous healing sessions given when I didn't know that they were being offered, and in each case over a 6-day period, when they occurred, within an hour of the time they occurred, I had dramatic reductions in my symptoms, be it a fever or a cough. And when it wasn't just one, it wasn't just two, but it was actually three, I was forced to entertain the hypothesis that not only could spirit-assisted healing be taking place, but I could bring it into the laboratory, because remember, I'm a scientist. So the actual source that led me to finally write this book was that particular moment. But the broader context of all of this is that I have been doing research on the question of, is there a greater spiritual reality? Does spirit exist? And if so, can spirit play a meaningful role in our individual and collective lives, including what I call spirit-assisted synchronicities, which directly relates to the title of your radio show? And in fact, it's probably the accounts in that book where I describe data collected as a scientist, but most of these, at least with regard to synchronicity, in the laboratory of my personal life, I was really forced to the conclusion that these synchronicities were in part being mediated or caused by people, quote, on the other side, plus a greater intelligence, which, you know, we might refer to as a universal energy or source or God or whichever label we wish to use. So when a scientist is pushed in this direction, and I realize you can not only do this in the laboratory of our personal lives, but you can do this in a university research laboratory as well, then I had to write the book.
And so, Gary, thank you for explaining that. And in the book, you talk a lot about a proof of concept experiment. So what's the difference between that and something that we would really consider scientific, like a double-blind study, like when they do drug testing and things like that? What's the difference?
Sure, and I do both in the book, of course. I talk about proof-of-concept experiments and actual full experiments. A proof-of-concept experiment is where you do something, either with yourself as a subject, but you approach it from a scientific point of view, or you bring it into the laboratory, but you pilot test it under real conditions, including blinded conditions, and you get positive results. So what that kind of research does is it says, look, this is possible. You can bring this into a laboratory and test it. And those are sort of proof-of-concept experiments. They justify the time, the money, the commitment to do the big experiments. And then, of course, there are those big experiments. There are the ones where you actually do the double-blind testing. And this book features more of the first two than it does the third. And part of the reason for that is because there's been virtually no science in this area in the first place, and people don't even know that it's possible. So until you show them that, look, this is possible, science can really address these questions, and not only that, get answers which are inspiring and are that, in fact, taking instead of taking us away from a greater spiritual reality, actually reveal a greater spiritual reality, that's the kind of thing that inspires you to move forward and also to apply it in your personal lives.
And so were you afraid when you wrote this book that people would call you crazy, your colleagues? And
yes, in fact, this is the, let me just think, this is probably, certainly it's the third book that I've written about the topic of life after death and a greater spiritual reality, and it's by far the boldest. Because not only am I saying that spirit is real, but I'm saying it can play an important role in our individual and collective lives. And then I'm reporting evidence both of my own personal life and other people's lives approached as scientists, and then actual laboratory experiments such as the use of this new technology that can measure single photons of light to actually detect the presence of spirit. And those experiments have been conducted double-blind. The latest one just came out last month. And was I concerned that many people would, or at least some people would call me crazy? The answer is absolutely yes. And in Appendix 4 of the book, I actually address the difference between genuine skepticism, you know, really asking honest questions with an open mind versus just biased disbelief, dogma, dismissal, arrogance at the level it's not quite cruelty, but it's putting such a dismissing things that are probably true. And what that does, of course, is that greatly hurts humanity, because we may be depriving ourselves of a significant solution to our problems. So, yes, I fully anticipated and continue to anticipate hostile criticism. And it, so to speak, it comes with the territory. I mean, it's at any time that any scientist tries to bring things forward which challenges the prevailing beliefs or foundations or assumptions of science, it's met with typically extraordinary resistance.
So, Gary, let's first of all talk about, I want to talk about some of the discoveries that you made.
Sure.
But you were a skeptic at first, correct?
Yes.
Because I want to make it clear that there are people who have these strong beliefs in spirit, and so whatever research they do is going to be skewed to substantiate the belief that they already have.
Right, exactly.
But you were coming from a different angle. So what even made you want, was it this really bad illness that made you start researching it?
No. That was just what led me to write this particular book, to come out of the closet with this evidence.
So
actually,
being
I started
skeptic,
on this journey. I mean, when I was raised in essentially an atheist home. My parents believed it was ashes to ashes, dust to dust, case closed. And I was raised in a scientific, you know, to be a scientific skeptic. In fact, someone recently said having a PhD is a permanently having doubt PhD. So I was raised to professionally have doubt. Okay, and I am a very good doubter, and I'm always, if not sitting on the fence of doubt, certainly leaning on it. And so I didn't start this research, which is actually now 15 years ago. I started it from having been taught that it was impossible. But there were two things that led me to become open to the possibility. One was my fascination with physics and the nature of light. And when I was a professor at Yale, the two-minute story is I came to realize that light was extraordinarily special. You know, when we look up at the sky at night, If we're in the country, away from the city, and it's a clear, no clouds, no moon, we can see, you know, hundreds or thousands of stars with the naked eye, and we can see billions of stars or billions of galaxies with powerful telescopes and associated cameras. But during the day, like I'm looking out at the sky right now in Tucson, and it's blue. There are no stars. And the question is, what happened to all that starlight that's been traveling for millions or billions of years? Where did it go? Did it simply disappear? Or are we blinded by the closest of the stars, which we call the sun? And that's really what the answer is. And so the lesson that I learned, the soundbite, the take-home message is, sometimes you have to go into the dark in order to see the light. In other words, that there's all this very low level or even invisible energy information that we may not be able to see under normal circumstances, but either by going into very quiet, dimly lit, meditative, and so on in context, or with technology that can enable us to see things that we can't normally see, that maybe there was this this realm of like photons, and that our energy was like the light from distant stars. It, too, continued indefinitely. So that was the scientific opening to the possibility. But then I was also, I met a series of people, and interestingly, they were all women, and they were all grieving a loss of somebody significant to them. And in one case, it was a PhD psychologist who was grieving the loss of her father, who was a distinguished physician and scientist. Or in my favorite case, it was a woman that I write about at some depth in the Sacred Promise book, a woman by the name of Susie Smith, who had published 30 books in the field of parapsychology and life after death, who had been a skeptical journalist who only in her 40s became open to the possibility of life after death. And I didn't meet her till she was 85 years old. And Susie became, so to speak, my adopted grandmother. She used to call me her illegitimate grandson. And as Susie was fond of saying, she couldn't wait to die so she could prove that she was still here. And these people were all searching for, were their loved ones still here? So, the soundbite is I was pushed to this research by the possibility of scientific theory and data. But I was pulled there by people's love, like Susie's love for her mother, for example. And when people are pulled in the same direction, it's very hard to resist. So that's how I really started in this work. So I began, as a skeptical, almost disbeliever. And what's happened is I've changed my conclusions based entirely on the data.
And Gary, it sounds like from reading your book that you feel that there are many, or at least there's the possibility that many scientists on the other side are waiting for us to be able to tap into this connection so they can give us all the information that we've been wanting to know.
Or at least a lot of it. Yes. I mean, there are three meanings of the title, The Sacred Promise. And one of those meanings is the promise that there really are people on the other side, including distinguished scientists, who care enough about us as a species and the planet as a whole to want to be of assistance to helping us solve problems. And that these people were caring of the planet when they were on the planet. And the metaphor that I use is, if you're bigger than life in this life, you're typically bigger than life in the next. And so these people are compassionate, they're caring, they have, an eternal mission. Or as I affectionately refer to it, Susie Smith, Susie gives new meaning to the phrase, our work is never done. However, in order for us to be able to receive this, the sources of both information and as well as wisdom, we have to be open to receiving it. We then have to be able to receive it accurately, to be able to discern what's real and what's not real, and then be able to apply it. And that's one of the great challenges and opportunities that we now have. And this book is in part, if you would, a champion for that possibility.
Wonderful. Well, Gary, it's time for a break already, so we'll be back in a moment. We are speaking today with Gary Schwartz, and he is the author of The Sacred Promise, How Science is Discovering Spirit's Collaboration with Us in Our Daily Lives. And if you have a question for Gary, give us a call, 604-822-2487. That's 604-822-2487. I'm your host, Marie Bernard. This is Synchronicity, talk radio for your mind, body, and soul. And we'll be back in a flash.
What do you think the internet should be? Fast? Open? Reliable? A network that is diverse? Free? free and allows an equal exchange of ideas? This point of view is often challenged by monopolies in the media, as well as by decisions made on issues such as internet openness and usage-based billing. Without question, these decisions have an immense impact on consumers, socially and economically. Let's admit it, the internet has become an essential part of our lives. That's where we come in. OpenMedia.ca is here to ensure that the decisions regarding the internet are fair and citizen-friendly. OpenMedia.ca is a national, nonpartisan, nonprofit organization. We advocate for a media communication system that adheres to the principles of access, choice, diversity, innovation, and openness. Our organization provides resources for volunteer organizers, collaboration tools, and leadership development. We engage, we educate, we empower. For more information, visit openmedia.ca, saveournet.ca, or follow us on Facebook and Twitter.
Life is hard. The world is cold. You're always too young and then too old. But we've changed all that. Escape from life at the new Waves on How concert series, where you're never too young or too old to rock out with Vancouver's most amazing bands each Friday and Saturday night from 8 p.m. till midnight. Sponsored by Covenant House. Come enjoy the show and donate to Covenant House's Street Youth Services Program. Join the Waves on How Facebook group for all the info. Waves on How is not responsible for smiling, laughing, singing, dancing, or sudden outbursts of complete happiness that may be caused by the Waves on How concert series.
Welcome back to Synchronicity Talk Radio for your mind, body, and soul. I'm your host, Marie Bernard. Thanks for being with us today. And our special guest is Gary Schwartz. He's a PhD. He received his PhD from Harvard. He taught at Yale for more than a decade, and he's been involved with countless academic papers, and he now has a book called The Sacred Promise, How Science is Discovering Spirit's Collaboration with Us in Our Daily Lives. Welcome back to the show, Gary.
Thank you.
Thanks. So I like to hear about stories. I think people like stories. So let's talk about your mother, Shirley. You were doing an experiment with some mediums, including a very well-known medium, John Edwards. And your mom kind of was being a little inconvenient. And
inconvenient is a mild way of putting it. She was almost ruining the experiment. And by the way, John actually wrote the foreword for the book, The Sacred Promise, which was very kind of him. The story was that we were doing an experiment. It was called the Canyon Ranch Experiment because it was conducted at Canyon Ranch. And there were three mediums, one of whom was John, and each medium was going to read five sitters, people who wanted to hear from their deceased. And it was the fifth reading during the day. John was tired. Everybody was tired. And he started receiving information, and this information included describing someone who had a doctor who was a Gemini, and so on and so forth. And then he said, Gary, he said, there are two mothers here, because he could talk to me. He was not allowed to talk to the sitter during this entire experiment, which is one of the reasons it was so controlled. He couldn't see the sitter because there was this floor-to-ceiling screen. He wasn't allowed to ask her questions, but he could communicate with me because I was the experimenter. And he said, Gary, he said, actually, there are two mothers here. And I think one of them is your mother. And he says, I need to verify whether this information applies to you. And he started giving information. And it turned out, as I describe in the book, this information fit me to a T. And what was really odd was, as is often the case with somebody like John, they will sometimes provide information that the sitter, in this case it was me, didn't know the answer to. So, for example, John allegedly said that my mother spoke about an uncle whose name was Morris, but he had another nickname or something like that. And then I had no idea if this was true, and so I had actually called my brother, who then had to call our cousin, and discovered, sure enough, that his father did have multiple nicknames, and his father's name was Morris. So. And what happened was is that it became really important that in the larger context that my mother did, if you would, drop in or interfere with the experiment. But we had to ask her to leave so that the so that the primary deceased people who related to the sitter could come through, because that was the data that had to be scored.
And so when a medium, I'm assuming that the mediums that you were doing this experiment with, you had the opinion that they were legitimate mediums, they weren't
fraud. Well, I was forced to that conclusion because of the way we designed the research. So, for example, in this particular experiment, the mediums could not see or speak with and got no verbal cues or visual cues from the sitters. So as a result, not only couldn't they use what's called cold reading techniques, which is what psychic entertainers use, but also they couldn't use what's called hot readings, meaning they couldn't use any information that they might have secretly obtained before the reading. So, for example, let's say that John or somebody had detectives and had my phone tapped, and they found out the name of the secret sitters, and they got information ahead of time. We arranged the experiment so that the order with which a particular sitter would meet with a particular medium was determined randomly just before the experiment began. And since John and the other mediums couldn't see or talk to the sitters, they had no way of knowing, even if they got information ahead of time, who to apply it to and when to apply it. And so the information was useless. And by the way, as I explained in the book, I read secret books on how to be a fake medium. I took a course on how to be a fake medium. I'm a pretty good fake medium. So consequently, I can discern, both knowing these techniques as well as designing the research, whether someone is genuine or not. Genuine meaning that they're getting something anomalously, something you could call paranormal or spiritual. And these mediums fit those criteria.
And so, Gary, I'm curious when people, so let's say that you definitely believe, or that the listener definitely believes, that there are spirits on the other side and they are willing and able to communicate through anyone who has access to that realm, such as a medium. What's typically the type of information? Is it just, I'm here, I'm okay, I love you and I miss you? Or do you find that there are often more important messages that come through?
Okay, well, that's a wonderful question. Thank you for asking it. If it's just a normal reading, you know, you have a deceased mother or child or whomever, and you wish to know, are they still here and are they okay? And you've got a half hour or an hour with a medium who you've never met before, either in person or over the phone. Under those circumstances, the primary kind of information that comes through is first identification information. And you could think about it, if you were the deceased person, you're in spirit, what do you want your loved one to know? Number one, you want your loved one to know that you're still here, so you have to be able to identify yourself. And so mediums will get information about what the person looks like, what some of their hobbies were, how they died, so on and so forth. The second kind of information that you're going to want is you're going to want people to know that you're still here, that you're watching over them. And so mediums will get information about the deceased is saying that you recently had a child and that she's happy that you named it Robert or whatever the case may be. Information implying that the what I now call the formerly physical people, or post-physical people, are still consciously around us. Then they might want to give certain advice or certain warnings, typically of a personal nature. And then finally, they're going to want to tell us that they love us, or they're going to want to tell us that they're sorry for something that they might have done. And that's typically the only kind of information that comes through in those kinds of readings. And it makes sense that that's all that would come through, because that was what the family members were there for in the first place. However, if instead you have readings where instead of grieving a deceased loved one, it's a scientist, such as myself, working with multiple mediums who allow very distinguished people to come through, where they can provide information about not just what's going on the other side, but what do they see happening to us here, and what kinds of advice do they have. And then we can do replication experiments, and even do double-blind or triple-blind experiments to verify the alleged information that the initial medium, the first medium might, what we call exploratory mediums, might obtain. When you open the door for that kind of information and you have a way to verify it, then all kinds of information comes through. And I'm just now becoming, if you would, brave enough to start doing that kind of research.
Well, Gary, and I'm curious, when, as a scientist, if you were trying to contact other scientists like Einstein or Darwin or any scientist from history, some people have, many people have the expectation or the belief that when you are, whether you're living or deceased, that we're all part of Source, and when we're able to connect with that, either through deep meditation or through passing on and dying, that you have access to all of the universal consciousness. So I'm curious what your opinion is, if you would actually need to speak with a scientist, or could you just speak with, you know, someone's granny and ask either one of them, what's the cure for cancer, and they could tell you.
By the way, that is a great question. You get an A+ for that one.
Thank you.
No one's ever asked me that question before. And I'll give you my initial thoughts, okay? First of all, no one's ever, as far as I know, raised that question and done such an experiment. Meaning?
Well, now you're going to have to.
Right, I'm going to blame it on you. We'll do this experiment. We'll call it the Synchronicity Talk Radio Experiment, okay? And we can name you expressly if you'd like.
Oh, thank you.
But you're asking a very deep question. Now, here's what I can share with you. At no time has any deceased person in any context, and deceased really means transitioned or transformed or, you know, ascended or whatever words you want to use, because they're not called dead. But what we don't know is that, let's say that you have a grandmother, and the grandmother is now, quote, on the other side. And she's open to communing with the Source and even has some skills with the Source. Is she now in a better position to go to the Akashic Field or the grand, you know, the Universal Library in the sky and just access this information? Or do you still need a skilled physicist like Einstein to bring forth equations related to physics, and a skilled evolutionary biologist such as Watson to bring through things about evolution, since you brought up Watson? In other words, are there skills involved in being able to access and interpret information even after you've passed? Now, no one's done that experiment, but the evidence suggests that you don't immediately have access after you've died. It's not all of a sudden you've now got the key and you can just immediately access information. There's still restrictions. There's still skills and openness to being able to receive it. It's, you know, in the same way that we have limitations here about accessing the universal field of knowledge. People have limitations there as well, but that's just based on, you know, my witnessing hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of readings. I've never witnessed yet, someone who's since passed on who has the kind of capability that you're describing. Now, also, I'd like to qualify something. I have never sought a specific deceased scientist. I've not yet ever done the kind of experiment which said, okay, I'd like to speak with Tesla, for example.
Well, he'd be a great one to talk to.
And now what I'd like is people on the other side to find Tesla and bring him to this medium in the laboratory. Every one of the deceased scientists, you know, the alleged or hypothesized collaborators from the other side that have appeared to be involved with this research, they've all shown up, quote, spontaneously, meaning through multiple other mediums, which then was verified, which I think is kind of interesting.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. Okay, well, we're going to talk more about that in just a moment. It's time for a break. This is Synchronicity Talk Radio for your mind, body, and soul. I'm your host, Marie Bernard. Thanks for being with us today. And if you have a question for today's guest, Gary Schwartz, author of The Sacred Promise, How Science is Discovering Spirit's Collaboration with Us in Our Daily Lives. Give us a call, 604-822-2487, 604-822-2487. We will be back with more synchronicity in a moment. I'm just waiting for this promo to come up. Here we go.
Hi, this is Dick Valentine from Electric Six. You're listening to CITR 101.9, University of British Columbia.
Welcome back to Synchronicity Talk Radio for your mind, body, and soul. I'm your host, Marie Bernard, and we are speaking today with Gary Schwartz, PhD. The Sacred Promise is the name of his book, How Science is Discovering Spirit's Collaboration with Us in Our Daily Lives. Welcome back to the show, Gary.
Thank you. You ask wonderful questions. I wish I could be interviewing you. I'd like to hear your opinions on these matters.
Oh, geez. My opinions. It's funny, people ask me what my opinion is on life after death and religion and all of that. And the more people that I talk to, when I started this show, I think I had a much clearer opinion. But now there's so much conflicting information, and all of these theories sound like they could be plausible. Mm-hmm. So I'm just really open to whatever. When I pass on, I'm guessing I'll probably figure out at least some of it. Hopefully.
Isn't that a lovely wish that, you know, if life continues, that the hope is that we can learn more, that we can continue to learn and hopefully correct some of our misperceptions here? It's one of the things, by the way, I look forward to if all of this is true.
And I'm curious, when we've been talking about if they're still here, if our loved ones or Einstein or whoever we're wanting to speak with is still here. And so I'm curious what here means, and if they're, in your opinion, because we watch shows like Ghost Whisperer, for example, where some people are ghosts and they're haunting and they really are actually here, kind of hovering around in this dimension, trapped between the other side and our existence. And so is that what here means, or can someone be completely crossed over to wherever it is that they need to get to and still be communicating with us?
Again, that's a beautiful question. No one's asked it quite so cleanly. We've done virtually no research on, quote, ghosts, meaning people who appear to be, quote, trapped and are sort of roaming around, you know, almost aimlessly in one fixed location. The kind of research that we've been conducting is with individuals who have, by all standards, have, quote, gone into the light, but have chosen to remain connected to the earth, either to be with specific loved ones or to have a broader mission. And the best way that I can think about it is, I'm reminded of a James Taylor song. I mean, I don't think I actually wrote it, but he certainly was one of the people who made the song well-known. And the lyrics go, winter, spring, summer, or fall, all you have to do is call, and I'll be there, yes, I will, you've got a friend. So it's more like, it's not like necessarily a person's just hanging around watching over you 24/7, although that might happen in some cases. But at least with the kinds of beings that we seem we're allegedly working with, they, quote, come and go, but they've always got their cell phone with them or their pager with them. And they choose to, they screen their calls, but they choose to take our call. And they choose to show up. And they can be, And they can be from one, you know, from one part of the earth to another part of the earth, or one part of the universe to another part of the universe, and that they're, but they are accessible because they care. And the bond, that the energy that connects all of us is love. Actually, my better half, Rhonda Eklund-Schwartz, she has a new book coming out called Love Eternal, which chronicles her personal experiences and then sort of self-science mediumship experiences with after her mother, who she dearly loved, passed, and how she came to the conclusion based on a whole series of data which she documented very carefully in diaries, and then subsequently after meeting me and marrying me, that the profound bond that had connected her and her mother and always led them to seek out each other, even when Rhonda was living in Seattle, for example, and her mother was still in Illinois, and her mother had gone deaf so that she would communicate via email, through text. But they were always seeking each other out because they loved each other, and this was not an unhealthy, you know, sort of a codependency kind of love. This was, as far as I could tell, a very mature, caring, respectful, sharing kind of love. And after her mother passed, and her mother was a deeply spiritual woman, Rhonda was clearly open to receiving, and her mother was clearly motivated to staying connected. And their relationship has seemingly endured as well as Susie's did with her mother, after Susie's mother passed, Susie Smith, the woman I mentioned earlier. So I think the bond of love is, it's the most powerful emotion that connects us when we're here, and it continues to connect us after we transition. At least that's what the data suggest.
And so, Gary, that love bond brings up another question for me. In the research that you've done, what is it that you think, I guess it's probably hard to say, but why do you think it is that only some people are able to connect with the other side, like mediums like John Edwards, and other people aren't?
It's a great question. I think there are probably multiple factors, and they would include, for example, potentially genetic predisposition and have with an increased sensory, you know, a sensitivity or a sensory capability or extrasensory capability or supersensory capability. You know, we know, for example, that people vary in their musical ability, right? Their ability to carry a tune versus have perfect pitch. We know that some people are super sensitive to light and to colors and can discriminate very subtle changes of colors, and others of us are colorblind. I mean, I'm relatively red-green colorblind, whereas Rhonda's an artist and she can see, you know, myriad shades of green, for example, which I can't see. So part of it is individual difference that may relate to literally our genetics and our wiring and our family history. Some of it relates to early experiences and being allowed to nurture them. So people like John Edward, for example, not only did it run in his family, but he was fortunate to have a mother who allowed him to not have to be ashamed of it. He didn't have to suppress it. So he was invited and encouraged to explore that realm. Many of us are taught it's impossible, like I was, and we're taught to shut it off. We're taught that it's merely a hallucination or a misperception, and so we're greatly discouraged from doing that. And then there's practice. There are skills that you can learn to increase your openness. And no matter what your history is, no matter what your gifts are, no matter what you are encouraged to do, if you don't learn the techniques and you don't keep those skills up, it's, you know, if you use it or lose it. Luciano Pavarotti, you know, a very famous opera singer and a wonderful instrument, but he used to also practice 3 hours a day so that he could keep up his, or more, to keep up his skills. And mediums report the same thing, that the more practice that they have in working and receiving and getting verification and learning how to interpret symbols and so on, quote, the better they get. But what's interesting is that I think all of us, I mean, mediums claim this, and I think I've been forced by the data and theory to come to the conclusion that all of us can learn to do this to some degree. I mean, I was a musician, and I could teach anyone who's never played the piano within 5 to 10 minutes to play chopsticks. Now, even though you may not know that you could do that, you know, I could put the numbers on the keys, and I could demonstrate, and I could move your hands and teach you some simple things, and you'll play a decent chopsticks within 5 or 10 minutes. It won't make you a concert pianist after that little brief period of time, but you've got the capacity to at least, you know, tap out some simple melodies on the keyboard. And I think it's the same thing with this kind of perception. The signal is there. It's just waiting. It's a talent that we all potentially have.
So, Gary, that brings up another question then. With you, you've taken some how to be a fake medium, how to be a fake psychic kind of courses and read books and stuff, and you've also been exposed to what we would call real mediums and real psychics. And so has any of this rubbed off on you? Are you able to access some of this now?
Yeah, well, it's really funny. First of all, Susie Smith, who, as I said, was my adopted grandmother, and I tell some remarkable stories about what she's taught me since she's passed in the context of actual double-blind experiments that we were conducting even. And those stories, they're just phenomenal. They're really fun, and they're both entertaining and educational and even inspiring. Anyway, Susie used to warn me when she was alive. She used to say, Gary, she says, you have to be careful. She said, mediumship is catching. It rubs off on you. And over the past now 15 years of doing this research, initially secretly and so on, I can say, first of all, as someone recently labeled me, that I'm the Helen Keller of afterlife science. Now, Helen Keller, as you may remember, was a woman who was both deaf and blind. Mm-hmm. But nonetheless, she learned how to read and to write. I mean, she couldn't read visually, but through Braille and so on. And she had a brilliant mind, but she couldn't see or hear. And I don't see and I don't hear. So in that sense, there's no question that I'm not a quote medium. On the other hand, I have increasing intuitive moments. I will have increased feelings. I will have increased anticipations. And they've become ever more accurate, and sometimes startlingly so. And the area that it's most strongly related for me is actually in the arena of synchronicity, which is one of the reasons I was intrigued to have the privilege to be with you on your radio show, because I talk about, in the book, The Sacred Promise, at least two or three chapters of apparent spirit-assisted synchronicity, where the reason that I had them was in part because I was, quote, willing to follow my intuitions, to, quote, go with the flow, and therefore be able to uncover the fact that these synchronicities were occurring. And then I have a new book that will be coming out, the first of two, which will be coming out this summer, called Sacred Timing, which is about the whole process of discovering synchronicity in one's life and how you can approach it from a scientific point of view, and that the more open and the more capable we are as tuning into these hunches, the greater our accuracy can be, and the more, you know, wonder and the extent to which we can be, quote, led by the universe.
So, Gary, speaking of synchronicities then, who do you think creates these synchronicities? Is it God or the universe, or is it specific loved ones on the other side, or does it even make a difference? Are they one and the same?
Well, in the most philosophical sense, as I wrote about in the God Experiments book, the all is in the small. I mean, everything that exists is a subset of the all, and so therefore you can say it's all one. From that sense, on the other hand, it's hubris to think that we have all the knowledge or power of that which created the universe. So we're like little sparks in the flame of God, or a little drop in the ocean of God. So we have, if you would, individual expressions of the divine. And we can choose to do things or not with relative freedom. And in the work that I've done, and the observations that I made, I'm going to take a drink here.
I'm just going to put out that
I don't think it's either or. I think it's and.
Okay. So it's both the
all
and your loved ones.
Yes, in fact, in some of the accounts that I describe, for example, the story about Susie Smith and Dragonflies and the movie Dragonfly and meeting the person who wrote the music for Dragonfly and then literally being led to meet someone who had an actual real-life experience that was even more dramatic or as dramatic as the fictional movie Dragonfly portrayed. That whole sequence was partly mediated by Susie, according to the data, but it was too complex and involved too many things to be able to, you know, attribute all of it to Susie. It had to involve much more.
All right, Gary, well, it's time to take another break, and so I'm going to put out that phone number again. We have just a few minutes left in the show. Coming up in about 15 minutes is Parts Unknown, hosted by Chris, and so stick around for that. This is Synchronicity Talk Radio for your mind, body, and soul. I'm your host, Marie Bernard, and you're listening to 101.9 FM CITR. If you would like to get on the air and ask today's guest a question, the number is 604-822-2487. That's 604-822-2487. So if you're sitting there and you have a question, you better call now during the break if you want to get on the air. 604-822-2487. Today's guest is Gary Schwartz. He's the author of The Sacred Promise, How Science is Discovering Spirit's Collaboration with Us in Our Daily Lives. And we'll be back with more synchronicity in just a moment.
How much do you know about bikes? Everything? Perfect. Nothing at all? Even better. At the UBC Bike Kitchen, you can use our space and tools to do your own bike maintenance, get one-on-one instruction on how to fix your bike yourself, or drop your bike off for us to repair. You can also buy a fully refurbished, guaranteed used bicycle, or a variety of new and used parts and accessories. The Bike Kitchen is UBC's non-profit, student-owned, full-service bike shop. We're located in the basement of the Student Union Building. Just look for the stairwell on the north side of the sub across from Gage Towers, or search for the UBC Bike Kitchen on Facebook. Stop by the Bike Kitchen and then get riding.
UBC's Museum of Anthropology displays long-term and visiting exhibits of Indigenous art from around the world, and guided tours are free. Our permanent collection features one of the world's finest exhibits of Northwest Coast First Nations art. Our collection includes 36,000 ethnographic pieces, 535,000 archaeological pieces, and over 600 pieces in the Kroner Ceramics Gallery. There's a lot to take in. Luckily, at the Museum of Anthropology, final exams are always take-home. If you've never checked out this world-class facility, now's your chance. The Museum of Anthropology is located right on campus and free for all UBC students and faculty. Come enjoy our collection and resources.
Welcome back. Happy Monday. I hope you're having a fantastic day and that you have a fabulous week. This is Synchronicity, talk radio for your mind, body, and soul. I'm your host, Marie Bernard, and today's guest is Gary Schwartz. He's the author of The Sacred Promise, How Science is Discovering Spirit's Collaboration with Us in Our Daily Lives. He's also author of The God Experiments and The Afterlife Experiments. And I want to talk more. I know you have, Kelsey Grammer is working on doing a show with you. I want to talk about that in a minute. But first, before we move into that question, collaboration. Spirits and the other side are collaborating with us. So other than synchronicities, what other ways are they collaborating with us?
It's a wonderful, really wonderful question. And again, it's one that no one's asked me before.
I'm just on fire today.
You really are. By the way, is this show affiliated with University of British Columbia?
The station CITR is part of the Alma Mater Society in the Student Union Building, and so every student on campus pays student union fees to keep the station running, so it is affiliated with the university.
Yeah. That is beautiful. First of all, I have to tell you that I was a visiting professor at the University of British Columbia,
Oh, wonderful.
From 1975 to 1976, Vancouver and the UBC is one of two of my favorite places in the world. I developed a passion for Pacific Northwest Coast art, which I continue to collect to this day. So I live with all that, the history of that area. So I just, it's really nice to be having this moment with you asking these wonderful questions right in UBC proper.
Well, thanks for connecting with us. I appreciate it.
Yeah, no, it's great. Now, getting back to your question about collaboration. You know, I think most people, certainly academics, psychology, we act as if we live in a spirit-less universe. And consequently, we don't think to seek guidance or collaboration with a greater spiritual reality. We assume that the problems are ours, and that to fix them, they must be done by us exclusively. But what if instead of living in a spirit-less universe, we live in a spirit-filled universe, a spirit-full universe, just as the vacuum, which is a... If there was ever a mistaken term that has been developed in science, it's the word vacuum, because we think of the vacuum as being empty of matter. But in point of fact, the vacuum is filled with energy and information, from light streaming in from all the galaxies from around the universe are all converging at any single point in time. All this energy and information is passing through there, plus there's what's called the quantum fluctuations, and there's dark matter and dark energy. The vacuum is filled with energy and information. Well, if the universe is similarly filled with spirit, and if spirit has been playing an invisible role with us all along, then the notion is that it's a two-way street. In other words, it's a process of not only can, quote, they help us, but we can, quote, help them. That it's teamwork. And building a team as opposed to thinking that it's just, you know, I ask a question, you give me information, and then maybe thank you. But the notion that it's a collaboration like a jazz group or a basketball team or a hockey team plays together, and that's the approach that not only we've taken in our research, but it's the way it appears to be with people who are more actively living with a spirit-filled relationship. In their personal lives.
Beautiful. Thank you so much. Well, we just have a few minutes left in the show, and I really want to... there's so many questions that I have to ask. We could talk about this for hours, but I'm going to just jump into the question about the TV show, because I love Medium, and Kelsey Grammer is... He actually wrote about your book. What's the word for that? An endorsement? An endorsement.
And he wrote an endorsement.
Yes.
Yes. Kelsey was interested in the idea of doing a television series based on the Sacred Promise book. But whether or not that will happen, these are very difficult times in the TV industry, and he's a very busy man. Multiple people have actually come to me about the idea of doing either documentaries or a TV series fictionalized based on the kind of work that we're doing. And I'm currently actively working with a particular producer on a possible mainstream show. My own feeling is that this work is so important, and it's so critical, if it's true, for our individual and collective lives, that the message needs to be get out. You know, I didn't call this book the Sacred Proof. I called it the Sacred Promise. So it's the promise that science can address these questions. It's the promise, if you read the book, you look at the totality of the evidence, the promise appears to be, you know, that it's going to continue to be positive. It's the promise that commitment, that there are caring people on the other side who are at least as caring now as they were when they were on the physical planet, and that they're not here just to prove that they're still here, but they're here because it's part of our future. And just as the Wright brothers, a little over 100 years ago, you know, we didn't know that airplanes could fly, and none of us could have predicted that we would not only have all these gigantic planes traveling 24/7, taking off and landing literally now every second. There's a plane landing or taking off around the world, and that we would all take this for granted. But the truth is that my working hypothesis is that we're having another Wright brothers moment, And this Wright Brothers moment is going to be the taking down of the veil. And not only are we as humans going to end up having an active connection with the other side, but if this work continues, we're going to reach a point where we all take it for granted. It's just going to be part of life.
Won't that be nice?
Food for thought.
So, Gary, I'm curious, first of all, before I ask you if there's anything else you want to add, do you have a website, or where can people get in touch with you and get your book?
I have a personal website called drgaryschwartz.com. That's drgaryschwartz.com, and they can find out about this book and other books and some of the philosophy of the work and get copies, download some of my research papers and the like. There's also a website that's in development called thesacredpromiseuniverse.com, sacredpromiseuniverse.com, including we're developing a video series, an 11-part mini-series about the book and other opportunities for people to get involved. And, you know, what I'm hoping is, particularly among students and also for their parents, that hopefully people will read this book and read other books like it, because there are very few things that are more important. I'm not sure if anything is more important than knowing that our energies, like the light from distant stars, that this is just one leg of the journey, and therefore we can learn to take more responsibility for what we do here and not have to feel like we have to do it all now. And therefore, by taking a longer view and a bigger view, maybe we can live lives that are more humane, more caring, more more sharing, less depleting of the, and maybe preserving of the gem that is Earth, and also feel that we can continue to be part of this home planet, if we so choose, after we ourselves have physically transitioned.
Beautiful. And Gary, we need to wrap up now, but is there anything else that you would like to add?
Just enjoy Vancouver. It's a beautiful place. thank you for so much for having me. And if you ever want to continue conversation, particularly about the main title of your show, which is Synchronicity, I would be happy to talk Synchronicity for hours.
Wonderful. I would love that. Okay. Well, thank you so much for being on the show, Gary. It's been such a pleasure speaking with you and reading your book.
And blessings to you and your audience.
Thank you. Take care. So that was Gary Schwartz. He is the author of The Sacred Promise, How Science is Discovering Spirit's Collaboration with Us in Our Daily Lives. I'm your host, Marie Bernard. This is Synchronicity, talk radio for your mind, body, and soul. Coming up in just a moment is Parts Unknown, so stick around for that. And next week, we are going to be talking with Caroline McGillivray. I hope I'm pronouncing her name correctly. She is actually a DJ here at CITR, a host of Sexy in Van City. And I believe she's going to be talking about her charity Beauty Night, the Beauty Night Society. So that is going to be a fabulous discussion next week. And we're going to be talking about new beginnings and so many exciting things that she has going on. So tune in next Monday at 12 noon. We'll be back with more Synchronicity next week. Have a fabulous week. Be well. Take care. I love you. Thank you so much for listening. And I'm going to end the show with a song by Ziggy Marley, Love Is My Religion. Take care.
Yeah.
Love is my religion. Love is my religion. I'll take you to the temple tonight. I've been searching to find out what this life is worth. Through the books and battles of time, I've made up my mind. I don't condemn, I don't convert. This is a calling, have you heard? Lovers to the fold, 'cause no one is gonna lose their soul.
Love is my religion.
Hey, you can take it or
want to fight. Hey, let's go fly a kite. There's nothing that we can't cure, and I'll keep you in my arms for sure. So don't let nobody stop us. Searching now, I found out what this life is worth.
You know, Joe, you start with these riffs in your head.
We're good.
And something you want to say, and you want to spin gold, but the thing is, people don't want your sounds. They only want...
You people, you're the fucking coolest!
Just fucking use you. Know what I'm saying, Joe?
What is that? What is it? One more shot in Saloon?
Tune in to Sore Throats and Clapping Hands, hosted by Robert Privet, Monday evenings at 6:30 on CITR 101.9 FM in Vancouver.
And in the end, it's love. And in the end, it's love. And in the end, it's love.
Become a friend of CITR and receive great discounts at businesses around Vancouver.
Your Friends of CITR card will net you discounts downtown at 212 Productions, Beat Street Records, Blim, Dream Apparel, The Fall Tattooing, Heart and Soul Clothing Incorporated, Hits Boutique, Pacific Cinema Tech, Scratch Records, True Value Vintage, Vinyl Records, and Zoo Shop.
It pays to be a friend of CITR. To find out more, come visit us in room 233 of the sub on UBC campus, or visit us online at citr.ca.
This boy and girl coming home from school look quite content with life. And why not? They're looking forward to an important date, dinner at home with the family. What's the matter? Doesn't that sound exciting to you?
Luckily, UBC students have lots of on-campus dining options.
World-famous Blue Chip Cookies. Located on the main concourse of the sub, Blue Chip features yummy baked goods and cookies made in-house. Blue Chip opens at 7 a.m. to serve all your early morning latte needs and has proudly served certified fair trade organic coffee since 2004. This business is owned and operated by the AMS, your student society.
You're listening to 101.9.